This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
For today's show, we have our second local harvest update for the week. Yesterday, I had a chance to ride along in the combine with WSMI's Tim Mize. Tim farms with his family near Bunker Hill in Macoupin County, and yesterday during my visit, we were harvesting a bean field. Tim said he's been happy with the yields and quality of crops this season, and we talked about how agriculture and farming is constantly changing.
So far, this field's looking good. It's non-GMO beans is what it is, an LG seed. And right now, I mean, the yields are up, you know, running around in that 70 range, which is what we like to see on our ground. And moisture's in that, you know, 11 to 12 range, so very good.
Sounds great. Does that surprise you? I know throughout the growing season, some of the crazy weather we've had, and this is a conversation I've had a lot lately with farmers, is, you know, we started out wet and then we went really dry and now we've had some rain. So did you expect to have good beans, or, you know, were you surprised?
I think we were anticipating a pretty good bean crop, maybe not quite as good as we've had the last few years, but to your moisture point, we saw that especially with the corn, to where the moisture just wouldn't come out of the corn, even though it was in the field. It just wasn't drying down like it normally did. And a lot of that probably did have to do with some of the different type of weather that we've had. But for the most part, I mean, we haven't had too big a problem with our moistures.
Sounds good. I know we just talked about this field specifically that we're in, but as a whole, talking about corn and beans, you can pick which one you want to start with. What are your thoughts for harvest 2017?
I mean, for us, our corn was really good. We had a lot of non-GMO white corn and non-GMO yellow corn. That was the primary bulk of our corn. And, I mean, it yielded real well. I mean, it was at the top end of what we expect to see. We only had to replant one 90-acre field, and that did average about 30 bushel less.
So you mentioned non-GMO, and I guess I hear more about GMO crops. Talk to us about why you guys choose to grow that.
Well, I mean, a couple reasons. The big reason, obviously, I mean, when you farm, you want to make money. That's kind of the whole point of the operation. But they've had really good premiums on non-GMO products the last number of years. And so that was one benefit. And then for us, we were running in, you know, to a pretty heavy Roundup resistance. So the non-GMO herbicides gave us a break from that. But we've started to see, like a lot of people have, starting to run into some resistance on the non-GMO herbicides as well, so we'll have to make a correction coming up.
So when you talk about making a correction, have you decided what you're going to do yet or looked into any products you'd like to tell us about?
We've had good luck with Liberty beans over the last few years. We've raised those, and I mean, that chemical really seems to smoke the mare's tail, which is a big problem, and it kills water hymns too, which obviously is about the biggest concern for us around here. But I mean, with anything else, if you just switch to Total Liberty and do that all the time, you're probably going to run into a resistance there. So I think a lot, like you'll see, crop rotation, chemical rotation is just as important.
Yeah. Well, I have to agree with you on that, and that's talking to a lot of farmers, they say the same thing. So it's just something that we're moving towards is having a lot of different technologies to use or methods to use.
And I mean, you have to be flexible. I mean, when you're farming, I mean, if you just kind of get set in one specific way, well, there's going to come a day where that way don't work no more.
Well, and it's refreshing to hear you say that, because I don't know that all farmers have that mindset, but I think moving forward, you're definitely right. And obviously, you know that. You're in the field today. You're doing it. I guess something else we should mention is you're in the combine today, but you've got other members of your family that work on the farm and help out with the operation, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're a full family operation. My dad's the boss man. You know, I mean, he started doing this with his dad when he was in high school, and he's farmed his whole life. And my brother and I now, we're both involved in farming full time. So yeah, I mean, it's a good time farming with your family. It's neat.
Yeah, and it's something that you've got years of experience, and it's definitely a way to grow up, and it's a good experience to have. I think that you appreciate this lifestyle.
No question about it. I mean, anybody who grows up in the country and then more specifically on a farm just kind of has a different perspective on things. And my perspective was even a little different than a lot of people who grew up on farms. I always helped my dad and always loved being on the farm, but he never pushed me into being a farmer, you know, like he always said, do something that makes you happy. And when I was getting out of high school, the farming business wasn't too profitable, so he didn't feel comfortable steering his kids into full-time farming. So both my brother and I went to college, got degrees in off-farm jobs and worked at those for a while, and then slowly came back to the farm over time, so it really worked out good.
And for those listening right now and thinking, I know this guy's voice. Yes, you do. It's Tim Mize, and we often hear him on broadcasting sports for us, and most recently filling in for Terry in the morning. So how do you make it work, Tim? It's a balance, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a balance. Just right now, you just kind of get up early and go to bed when you can. I mean, that's, it's just like anything else. You just kind of get into a routine and just deal with it, so to speak.
Anything that I've missed asking you about the farming operation? I know you mentioned your brother and your dad being an active part, but you have other siblings, and I assume your mom helps out once in a while too?
Oh yeah, I mean, that's how it goes for any farm family. You know, if you're involved in the bloodline, you're going to be involved in the operation somehow, whether it's, you know, giving rides from different places or hauling wagons back and forth. There's always jobs to be done, and usually for a lot of people, there's a shortage of hands to get them done, but we're fortunate.
And once again, that report comes to us from WSMI's very own Tim Mize in Macoupin County. And we'll have more ag news after these messages. U.S. commodity export groups, along with counterparts from Canada and Mexico, are reiterating their support for free trade. The U.S. Grains Council, along with the U.S. Soybean Export Council, national sorghum producers, national corn growers, and others, met with counterparts from Canada and Mexico last week. As round four of the North American Free Trade Agreement negotiations conclude, the groups continue to stress the importance of the agreement to agriculture. In a joint statement, the groups encourage negotiators to continue their participation in good faith in the negotiations and produce an agreement that builds upon our ongoing success. Round four of the talks in Washington, D.C. saw the introduction of ag proposals by the U.S. The groups point out that grains and soy trade between Mexico and the U.S. in 2016 represented more than $6.6 billion, with more than 90% of those ingredients consumed by the Mexican livestock industry. In other news, the EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt is touting a directive he signed this week to end the EPA's so-called sue-and-settle strategy, a practice ag groups opposed. Pruitt issued an agency-wide directive Monday to end the practice, a move he says means the days of regulation through litigation are over. Pruitt said the agency would no longer go behind closed doors and use consent decrees and settlement agreements to resolve lawsuits filed against the agency by special interest groups. Pruitt announced his intention to end sue and settle in March of this year. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce describes the sue-and-settle practice as when a federal agency agrees to a settlement agreement in a lawsuit from special interest groups to create priorities and rules outside of the normal rulemaking process. As an example, between 2009 and 2012, EPA chose not to defend itself in more than 60 lawsuits from special interest advocacy groups. The chamber says these cases resulted in settlement agreements and the EPA publishing more than 100 new regulations, including the recent Clean Power Plan. And that's all we have today for your WSMI Farm Show. I'm Katie Wilson.